Love's Truck Care and Speedco is the nation's largest preventative maintenance network over the road. With more than 1,500 maintenance bays offering light mechanical services and DOT inspections, we've invested in our locations and staff to get your drivers back on the road quickly and safely. Visit Loves.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Stockout. This is your show at FreightWaves that discusses the consumer packaged goods industry, the CPG industry, and their supply chains. I am your host, Mike Bowden-Distel. I'm the head of Intermodal Solutions here at FreightWaves. And today, I'm going to talk a little bit about Kroger. And they just had an earnings call last week, which I think gives CPG companies insights into knowing what their, well, at least one of their largest customers is saying, probably not their largest, but one of their largest, which is only going to get larger with this Albertsons acquisition, assuming it closes. So I'll talk about that. I'll talk a little bit about why grocery prices are still high, even though the underlying commodity prices have been falling, and talk through some sonar highlights, talk about freight transportation data trends that we're seeing in our high-frequency data at FreightWave. So I'll go through those things today, try to be efficient here. Don't think I'm going to take up the whole time. But I'll start with Kroger, since we don't have a sponsor today. Kroger reported last week, December 1st, they reported the same store sales for the quarter up 6.9%, digital sales up 10%. So it almost seems like, well, you sort of think about how much grocery prices are up, which is sort of in that 13 to 14% range. You know, maybe seeing a little bit of volume slippage there. They did, increase their same store sales guidance for the year, though, from 4 to 4.5% to 5.1 to 5.3%. The implication is that they'll have about 4% same store sales growth in the fourth quarter, which ends, I believe, in January. Retailers tend to report at a little bit of an off time, so. That's a little bit of what CPG companies should maybe be expecting if they're selling into Kroger. Kroger took its earnings per share guidance up ever so slightly, up a dime from $3.95 to $4.05 to $4.05 to $4.15. Wall Street seemed disappointed in that. Shares down about 6% in the last 5 days. And they addressed that sort of falling same-store sales growth guidance of only 4% in this upcoming quarter. By saying they're really lapping higher inflation with last year, so it's a little bit of a timing, situation. So there's also some interesting comments from various analysts that ask questions about the market share. I mean, one of the topics I've talked about here on the Stockout show is the discount grocers and discount retailers taking share in the grocery categories from the traditional retailers. So you've seen people trade down from companies like Kroger to companies like Walmart. Even some of the dollar stores are getting in on the action. Most of those big box retailers say they're taking a share, which makes a lot of sense. But some of the analysts commented and pointed out, and I think Kroger's management team agreed that it seems like the market share is stabilizing. So it does seem like a lot of the people who were inclined to trade down from the traditional grocers to the discount grocers have maybe already done that. Kroger also brings up a good point that eating at home is about 3 to 4 times cheaper than going out to a restaurant. That's an argument that a lot of the CPG companies make for why their elasticities have been so low relative to history, given how much prices have risen for a lot of these CPG items, which have been a lot of them in the 15% range this year, and last year in the high single digits. Kroger also mentioned that a supply chain in general is getting better, and some areas that they are still having issues: cat food, dog food, baby formula. That seems like to be the issue that never goes away, and cold remedies, which is probably the most inopportune time to not have cold remedies on the shelf. But the dog food and cat food thing is interesting because there's been a lot of additional capacity in pet food manufacturing that is currently in the process of getting ramped up. And actually, some are suggesting that maybe the industry is going to overshoot that and build too much pet food manufacturing capacity, which could lead to a glut. I mean, a lot of that's in response to people adopting pets during the pandemic. those pets are going to be around for a while. And actually the pet ownership, some people don't call it pet ownership, pet being a pet parent, has been a growing trend with, you know, families getting smaller. So it's really been that pet food category has been a huge growth in the CPG, industry, and don't really see that slowing down, even with things, opening up after the, height of the pandemic. Kroger says he believes that the supply chain and alternative profits should be tailwinds next year. So maybe supply chains that are not as constrained as we've seen. And then the alternative profits category is an interesting one for grocers because it includes things like selling advertising space to CPG companies or others that would make good use of it. If you're a CPG company and let's say you're selling a certain type of protein bar that people haven't heard of, you could target people who typically buy Clif bars, typically buy Power bars, get in front of them, maybe give them a coupon, they can get one for 25 cents or something just to sort of get them in the door. I think those type of sort of cyber advertising is really going to come on strong here in the next few years. I think it's only going to be bolstered by Kroger's acquisition of Albertsons, which would give it data on most every consumer that shops at a traditional, grocery store, which is going to be something like over 100 million households. Another interesting thing that Kroger says, it believes that its inflation will be 2.5% to 3% or so for next year, which seems like that would be a little bit better than what they experienced this year. So something to keep in mind if you're a CPG company selling into these stores. It looks like their inflation those retailers' inflation's come down a little bit. It still is higher than what they would traditionally say is sort of the typical amount of cost inflation that they would normally see, which is sort of in that 1 to 2% range. Also on the topic of Kroger and Albertsons, there was a hearing in front of lawmakers. I didn't see anything that was new, but I did think there was a really good quote that I'm going to read you from Michael Needler. He's an independent grocer from a company called Fresh Encounters, a third generation independent grocer. He told this to a panel of lawmakers in Washington. This was published by Winsight Grocery Business. So he says, "Our view is this: American grocery sector is getting less competitive from increasing competition and unchecked buying power due to a lack of enforcement of the Robinson-Patman Act. Let me be clear, we are agnostic on this transaction," and the transaction in question is Kroger acquiring Albertsons. "We are not afraid to compete against anyone, no matter how big. We are opposed to the lack of constraints on buyer power, which thwarts our ability to compete in the first place. So if you're not familiar with this Robinson-Patman Act, so this was a law, went into law a number of decades ago, and it's designed to make sure that sort of independent stores that are smaller grocery stores, smaller booksellers, et cetera, can compete against the largest national chains. And it makes it so a supplier, in this case, CPG company, can't discriminate on price. And let's say, for instance, charge Walmart $1 for every box of Oreos and charge a local grocer $3 for the same box of Oreos. So argument this grocer is making is that law, which is on the books, is not enforced, and sort of looked into it a little bit, and there really haven't been a lot of legal cases that sort of surrounding that. I looked and saw one that was a lawsuit against 5-Hour Energy for supposedly discriminating and giving Costco a better price than local stores for 5-Hour Energy. And I guess the way they sort of get around it is by saying, well, these are functionally not the same, type of SKUs if they buy in bulk. So it really hasn't been something that's been enforced, but it is something that maybe will be looked at closer, assuming that Kroger is able to acquire Albertsons. Kroger has said that they're going to go out with Albertsons as one company to its suppliers, sort of as you would expect. The implication is, well, maybe they should be getting, better price in addition to doing things like streamlining supply chains. So something to watch, going forward. I'll move on to topic number two. And really, it's that grocery prices haven't fallen with commodity prices. And that's been one thing that's been written up in a lot of the business news here. Recently, they take surveys of what people's biggest economic concerns are right now. And actually the number one thing in a lot of these surveys is grocery prices. And I think that's, you know, something that maybe comes up because, you know, you go to a grocery store on average, you know, a couple times a week for those people that do the shopping in their household, and you sort of see it all the time. And it's still kind of, you know, shocking that your same things you bought, you know, a year ago might be 20% higher or more versus what it is. And I think overall, groceries are still trending higher, and that's sort of 13 to 14% range. But it has been a situation where every month they've been higher than the last month overall. And, you know, I have a chart here on wheat prices, and you would sort of look at that and say, well, I mean, grocery prices should be coming down. I mean, look how much they rose steadily throughout the pandemic. Okay. March 2022 hit after the Olympics ended, you had the invasion of Ukraine, wheat prices, agriculture prices went crazy. Lately, they've come down to kind of before, you know, that time period and sort of the beginning of this year, you would sort of say, well, you know, that should translate into lower grocery prices. But, you know, a couple points here from some of the press that's written about this. Normally, it takes about 3 to 6 months for grocery prices to adjust, at least downward. And retail prices, you know, as I've talked about before on the Stockout, tend to adjust slower on the way up in response to commodity prices than the producers' prices do. And then on the way down, they also react, you know, lower. There's just more sort of barriers there between the commodity costs and ultimately what consumers end up bearing. I have a sonar chart that shows both the consumer price index and the producer price index graphed on top of each other. And you've seen that in the white line there is the CPI. You know, that's the prices, basket of goods that the consumer is paying at stores. And as we all know, that's been up as much as over, you know, 10%. And the last reading was 7.7%. The producer price index is what manufacturers pay for their inputs. And that's risen a lot too. In fact, it's risen faster than the CPI throughout the second half of 2020, throughout the entirety of 2021, and the first half of 2022, those prices have finally started to crack. And so you look at that and say, well, if those two lines continue to go in opposite directions, consumer prices rising, producer prices falling, or at least that gap, you know, widening, then the CPG companies, other manufacturers should start to see a rebound in the margins that they saw shrink in the last couple of years. Most of them had a margin decline in 2021, had another further margin decline in 2022. They've always seemed like they're trying to catch up in terms of increasing their prices. They've had to go to the retailers a number of different times, asking them for multiple rounds of price increases. So a couple other bullet points here for why those prices are taking longer to fall is it's easier just to keep for retailers just to keep the prices frozen rather than reduce them. And maybe that just means in the future, instead of having to take another price increase, instead of taking the prices down in order to just increase them again, they can just sort of keep them flat. And that seems to keep consumers happier than raising prices, which they tend to notice. And then also there's just a lot of other costs that are still rising that both the CPG companies and the retailers are having to bear that go beyond the ingredients, which would be things like, of course, labor, packaging prices are still at a high level, transportation costs. Yes, those have come down if you exclude fuel, but fuel's a lot higher than it was last year. So all in, those prices are still, those costs are still higher, all things considered, for CPG company, for the retailer. And then contract manufacturing has been an issue for the CPG companies, and then the grocers, you know, those real estate is expensive. You know, to the extent that leases roll over, those are being, you know, priced at a higher level. So that's a little bit why, you know, we're not really seeing relief at the grocery store. And I'll move on to the last segment today. I'll run through some sonar highlights of a few things that I would be paying attention to if I was at a CPG company. And I'll bring up the first one here, which is the van contract rates, comparing those to the NTI. So van, driving contract rates in white, you see that national average of $2.62, that excludes fuel. So if you're looking at this excluding fuel, you've gotten a break from early this year when they were about $3. So they're down, let's call it 15% or so. If the NTIL is the one in orange, which is the spot rates, And we, you know, spot rates typically include fuel. With this data set, we're using an algorithm mathematically to remove what the fuel surcharges would be using $1.20 as a baseline. Most fuel surcharges based on $1.20 sort of baseline, you know, fuel, and then go up from there. So you sort of compare those two things and say, well, at the start of the year, spot rates were higher than contract rates, you know, like they should be. And then, you know, really starting in about March, the spot rates really fell off a cliff. And that's when, you know, we really started writing articles on freightwaves.com about how we're expecting freight, you know, weakness in the freight market. You know, March is typically a very strong month for freight. So really the market was doing sort of the opposite of what it should have been doing, which we interpreted as being a pretty strong signal there. And now you look at, you know, where those two lines are. 262 national average for van contracts, 202 average for spot rates. So the spot rates are lower by 60 cents a mile. And so that's a situation where shippers are going to move from moving you know, goods in the contract market to moving them on the spot market. It means also when van contracts roll over that the shippers can be more aggressive in negotiating those rates. And I think we're going to see that, you know, especially when a lot of these contracts either roll over, you know, early next year, or once we get past the holiday season. January and February are traditionally weak months in the freight market. March does tend to be a little bit stronger, but it is a long way until March. So that's what I think we'll see in, you know, the dry van market. Another thing, you know, thing I want like to look at is the tender rejection index, sort of one of the flagship indexes that we have here at FreightWaves. And this particular one includes both dry van, reefer, even some intermodal tenders are there. But, you know, dry van is the bulk of this. And really what you notice now is just how there hasn't been any seasonal ramp up. You see the white line is 2022. You see how that's declined throughout this year, and you haven't seen that seasonal bounce in November, like even you did in 2019. And 2019 was a very weak year for freight. There were a lot of carrier bankruptcies, but even then, you saw that orange line bounce upward and got as high as almost, you know, 14% tender rejection rate. A higher tender rejection rate is a tighter market relative to how much capacity is available. And now we're sitting at 4%, which is just about the lowest it's been, you know, really in a long time since certain parts of 2019, which was, of course, just really weak, you know, freight year, as I said. So that's another indicator that there's plenty of capacity available, that the carriers are not rejecting tendered loads that they would move under the contract markets. When those are available, they're taking them. I'll move on to the next one, which is the reefer outbound tender rejection rate, which looks very similar. If you sort of blink, you might not have noticed we changed charts there. But there, and the reefer tender rejection rate is even less than the overall, or not less than the overall, but it looks worse relative to recent years, where 6% of refrigerated tenders are being rejected. And what's sort of noticeable is not only that it's well below the last 3 years, but just how steeply it's come down. You know, we're looking at 2021, the reefer tender rejection rate was as high as 50% in early 2021. It's particularly tight after the Texas snowstorm in February of that year. It was also very tight in 2020, where it got up to about 50%, where about 50% of reefer carriers were rejecting tenders. Now we're down at 6%. There's plenty of capacity in that market as well. I know a lot of CPG companies play in that market and care more about that market than dry van. So I wanted to highlight that as well, that that change has been even more dramatic, despite the fact that the reefer carrier market is more fragmented. Still wouldn't call it a fragmented or more concentrated than I still wouldn't kind of call it a concentrated market, but more concentrated than the dry van, you know, market. I'll move on to this next one, which is the intermodal contract rates. And I wanted to bring this up too, because intermodal contracts, you know, are one where I think next year you're going to see a very different pattern than you've seen the past 2 years. So the past 2 years, going from 2019 to 2020, and also going from 2020 to 2021, and then into 2022, what you really had is two consecutive years of steep double-digit contract rate increases. And so you see how in 2021 in orange, there was a big jump up from the previous 2 years. 2022 in the white line, another big jump up from 2021 levels. And what contributed to those were a lot of tightness in the peak season, sort of the fall traditional sort of peak season in intermodal, which you tend to think of as being October as kind of being the peak month for intermodal. You know, some in the months that neighbor October, sort of about September and November, but you really haven't seen a significant intermodal peak season this year. I think, you know, J.B. Hunt summed it up really well in their third quarter earnings report when they just said, you know, intermodal peak season is not going to be much of an event. Confirmed what we were seeing in our data, but when that happens, shippers are much less concerned with securing capacity for next year's fall peak season. And so usually if they're concerned about securing capacity for sort of the fall peak, maybe they would agree to a little bit higher price for the full year so that capacity in the back half of the year is available. That doesn't seem to be necessary for shippers, at least if they sort of think, well, past is going to be prologue and don't think there's going to be a big change in consumer spending in some of the other things that go into intermodal volume, which would be the port activity and the inventory levels, which, you know, those should get better sort of throughout next year, you would think, may overcorrect at some point if there's so little ordering and so little imports that they draw down those inventories. But for now, it doesn't look like the rates are going to go any higher here, and an intermodal contract would expect those to be down next year. So those are a few of the highlights. Some of the other things that I'll talk about for 2023 in terms of the CPG companies is there is a lot potentially coming in terms of regulation. There's a lot of regulation for that's potential for things like nutrition labels, where the Biden administration did a hunger summit recently and had a lot of recommendations based on basically proposed regulations based on what's taking place in Europe, where they're having to have a big nutrition labels on the front of packaging, which is supposed to just be a lot clearer than what we see currently on food products, which is everything on the back label. It would be kind of a stoplight, red, yellow, green for salt, sugar, and fat. So just real easy to tell if this is something, you want to eat or not. There's also a lot of regulations coming down the pipe, particularly in California related to animal welfare, things like, the chickens being treated properly? Are the pigs given enough room in order to make their conditions humane? So there's a lot to watch out for there too. So a lot of topics I think to monitor with the CPG industry. I think still the two biggest issues in the CPG industry are elasticity. Sort of prices are a lot higher than they have been. Consumer seems to be getting more stressed. How much is sales volume going to change in response to those levels? So far, elasticities have been low, but some companies have talked about those as rising. So that could be an issue. And then the other thing is just, can these companies get their margins back? And what ultimately happens with their prices if those commodities continue to come down? Are prices just going to sort of stay where they are at a high level? And maybe it means that these companies don't have to go back to their retailers to take price, or maybe they take price, up 1% a year for the next few years instead of taking them up 4 or 5% like they might normally. So that's a question. Or are these CPG companies going to get more competitive and say, well, we're losing volume because of the sales? They're going to start to cut prices. I think that remains to be seen. I think some of the other trends I'm seeing in CPG industry is cutting the number of SKUs, where CPG companies are looking at their portfolio and saying, we don't need this many SKUs, particularly when we think that if we eliminate one of the less profitable SKUs, that those customers are going to go to one of our other products, and we're just going to have more profit from those customers because we can funnel them into something else. A CPG company does need to have a certain amount of scale in order to do that. So some of the companies that we see doing that are Nestle and J.M. Smucker Company, which Nestle is the biggest packaged food company. Smucker has a lot of different options in things like coffee, where it feels like it can steer consumers to another one of those products. So I think we'll see a lot of that. And then another thing I'm watching is just all the automation, which is really being invested in heavily across the board, but sort of especially in a lot of these meat processing companies that are having a hard time finding people. So with that, that's really what I wanted to go over today. If you have not already signed up for the newsletter, please do so at www.freightwaves.com/thestockout. If anyone needs anything from me, please reach me at mbowdendistel@freightwaves.com. Also available on LinkedIn, and hope everyone has a great Monday.